It's time for a weekly look at what's happening in Congress with USA Today politics editor Paul Singer. The nation's legislature is back in Washington this week after their August recess. It's time to address the militant group ISIS.
The president will lay out his plan to address threats from the group this evening, but what role will Congress play? The president has not committed to asking Congress for permission to strike ISIS in Syria. And with an upcoming election, it's not clear if Congress wants to vote on the issue.
And by the way, tonight, President Obama is speaking at 8, and we'll have that here on Wisconsin Public Radio, so you can check it out. You don't want to wait that long, though, so we'll preview a little bit with Paul Singer now. Paul, good to have you back.
Great to be back on the air with you guys. How are you?
Well, great. Great. Good to have you back. So do we know yet what President Obama is likely to say about his plan to target this Islamic State movement?
Not really. We're expecting a briefing, actually, on background from the White House in about an hour that'll give us a little more detail. I think the gist of this is going to be that they're going to be more assistance to the Syrian opposition that has opposed both President Assad there, but could also be some assistance to us in combating ISIS. There will be, obviously, more conversations about bolstering the Iraqi military, and I presume also more conversation about working with the Kurds more closely in arming them, training them, other sorts of things. What I don't think we're going to talk about in any kind of detail is airstrikes across the border in Syria, although that is something that is clearly of great interest and discussion here in Washington. There, a lot of folks think that there's no way you can really combat ISIS without airstrikes in Syria. Hard to figure out how to sort of get at that issue because, of course, now you're starting opening essentially another war front in another country.
Now, is Congress pushing for a vote on the use of force in Syria as a whole, in Iraq, at any point here?
No, Congress is largely hiding under their desks. I think the issue for Congress is basically this. They want to be supportive of an American, a sort of a muscular American response to ISIS, ISIL, SIS, however you want to call it. But they don't really want to vote on it. They obviously there are elections going on. People don't want to be responsible for casting the vote to get America into another war. That did not go so well for candidates in the previous elections. I don't know that the Obama administration has said very clearly, and the president has said very clearly, that he has the authority he needs, he believes, to conduct this military action against ISIS. Where I think you'll find Congress involved is they will probably be asked by the administration for more money, money specifically to carry out some of this military campaign. I mean, my favorite soapbox thing, our military that we spend $500 billion, $600 billion a year funding, that money doesn't pay for wars. Wars cost extra.
Mm-hmm.
So when we start launching missiles and moving troops and stuff like that, it just costs more money. So Obama will probably ask them for some funding for that. There is a funding bill coming up. Your news report just mentioned that short-term funding bill will come up next week. I suspect there will be some opportunity to vote on money for this initiative in there.
Are we seeing any leading voices in Congress saying
no.
Whether you want to vote or not, we should have one?
No.
No.
Not really. I mean, Mitch McConnell yesterday said he thought it was important for Congress to have a vote and be supportive. The Senate Republican leader. Nobody else really has. In fact, interestingly enough, there was a Democratic congressman, senator, and I'm sorry, I'm blanking. I think it was Nelson of Florida, who said, I'm going to offer a bill or a resolution to vote on ISIS attacks. But then he said basically, yeah, I'm offering it just because I think we ought to offer it, but I'm not really sure I want to vote on it either. It's a hard thicket for Congress to tiptoe through. They're not sure what their role is. They're not sure what they can do, and of course they don't want to contradict or complicate the military's efforts here to fight these militants in Iraq and Syria.
Well, we'll see if the president calls on anything from Congress tonight. Another note, a militarization issue a little closer to home. A Senate Committee on Homeland Security held a hearing to discuss the militarization of local police. This is in light of the protests in Ferguson and the police response there. A lot of condemnation from some people on both sides on the use of military equipment by local police departments. Is Congress, was this just kind of a thing for show, or is Congress going to seriously review this issue?
My guess is somewhere in between. I mean, I would not be at all surprised. The thing that was interesting about that hearing is that the federal officials who oversee these programs that give military surplus items, essentially, to local police departments, is that they all sort of agreed that they don't really track the stuff. They don't know what happens to it after it leaves and goes to the local police departments. They don't actually really do a needs assessment either. So they're never entirely sure who's using it for what. I think the Senate's approach was, or the senators at this hearing, they were like, well, I mean, if we're going to be giving away all this equipment, shouldn't we know more about what good it's doing, whether it is useful, how it's being used, who really needs it? I would not be surprised to see them try and establish some additional review of those programs for that purpose. Now, I'll also say that a bunch of the law enforcement community said, you know, this stuff actually is really helpful. And during the Boston Marathon bombing, a lot of the stuff we had done with Homeland Security and with federal funding was helpful to the local police. In Hurricane Sandy in New Jersey, we were driving armored vehicles in places where we couldn't drive cars because the bridges were out. So it's not just that people with tanks go to break up protests of unarmed civilians. It really is, they say, helping local communities be safer and be better equipped. It's not just a one-way street that it's you know, throwing all this hardware into the street for no purpose.
So we might see not a ban on military equipment going to police departments,
no,
but some kind of, as you said, needs assessment, oversight,
yeah,
for exactly where it's going.
Yeah, I think it's you're likely to get more oversight, certainly not a ban. I think this program will prove to have sufficient value that they're going to retain them in some way.
Well, turning to election season, we've been following with you, Paul, a lot of the key races for control of the Senate. We had a primary in one of those yesterday in New Hampshire. Former Massachusetts Senator Scott Brown, right, won his,
yes,
primary, challenging incumbent Democrat Jean Shaheen. Jeannie?
Yes.
So what's at stake in this race? Is this really a key?
It's hard to tell at this point, Rob. I mean, we don't know how close this race is going to be. We don't know how serious a challenge Scott Brown poses to Jean Shaheen. There have been polls that have shown her up by 10, 12 points. That's fairly significant. But there was one poll that popped up a week or so ago that suggested it was only a couple of points that she was ahead by, and that's more interesting.
Well, Scott Brown's been underestimated before.
Scott Brown's been underestimated before. I mean, I think his problem, of course, is that he hasn't lived in New Hampshire for a long time, so that's an issue. And so he's seen as an outsider, and obviously the Shaheen campaign is going to drumbeat on that topic for a long time. But even if he doesn't win, of course, he requires Democrats to spend a lot of time and energy in New Hampshire defending a seat they were not expecting to have to work hard to defend. To some degree, the fact that you and I are spending time having a conversation about New Hampshire, the Republicans are already in an advantage that they were not expecting to be 6 months ago. So that's good for them. Whether Scott Brown can actually win this seat or not, I honestly don't know. My impression is that Shaheen is fairly popular and will probably come out ahead. But, you know, we still have 8 weeks, and let's see how the campaign goes.
Well, less than 2 months till those elections. What is at the top of Congress's to-do list between now and then?
Well, the first thing you got to do is this spending bill. Nobody wants to shut down the government again on September 30th. So they've got to get a spending bill passed by then. The plan is to do a temporary bill as usual, kick the can down the road until middle December, so that after the elections, the lame duck Congress can come back and come up with a better, more long-term budget plan for the rest of the year. That is the only really must-do thing in the next 2.5 weeks. And in fact, it's possible. They're scheduled to be here for 3 weeks. That's 2 weeks of work, 1 week off for Rosh Hashanah, and then 1 week back. It's possible they'll cancel the 1 week back because there's just not enough to do.
All right, Paul, thanks as always for joining us.
My pleasure, Rob. You all have a good night.
You too. That's USA Today politics editor Paul Singer. We've been talking about what's going down in Washington as legislators return from their August vacation. He joins us each week at this time to talk Congress.